You are now listening to the hottest true crime podcast in the streets.
Hi there. Hello. Welcome to another episode of Affirmative Murder, the Equal Opportunity.
Okay.
The Equal Opportunity True Crime Comedy Podcast. I'm Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner in true crime, Francel Evans.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Yeah, man. I'm the mailman. Can't you tell, man? Gonna post to it.
What up? Fran, how are things? How you feeling?
Doing good, man. It's freezing cold outside, man.
Frigid.
Yes.
It's different out there.
Yeah.
It's like a tundra.
And we missed up, went out and it's down in the city. You see the homeless people down there, man. It's like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
No, those, these are rough times. Then Squeegee Boys are still out. They were still out, man.
Yeah, yeah, man. The dollar never sleeps.
You I get it.
Me? The money never sleeps.
I get it.
If you have a couple dollars to spare, buy some gloves, some beanies, put them in your trunk. See a guy, lady on the street, no gloves, no hat, no socks, something. Hop out. Give them something warm because, you know, you take it for granted. Anyway, Fran,
yeah.
We left people on a bit of a cliffhanger.
We told them,
yeah, we did an episode. We pre-recorded an episode before my trip to Jamaica.
Oh, yeah.
Back. Better than ever.
Yeah.
Island boy. Fresh glow from the tan.
Mm.
You know.
Had a good time?
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah.
I tried to get some of those white people cornrows, but I didn't have enough hair to get it. You ever seen vacation cornrows white people get? Mm. With the beads on the back?
Oh, yeah.
Scalp is just pink and, oh, it's just hurting. I didn't have enough hair to pull that off. But. Had a fantastic time in Jamaica.
Yeah.
You know, saw our buddy JJ get married. It was beautiful. He spoke patois in his vows. Like, Filipino JJ was like, I feel love you today. it was beautiful. But it was mad touching because his wife, I almost disrespected, his wife is Jamaican.
Mm-hmm.
And her dad was in the front row.
Yeah.
Giving off big Shatta's vibes, like some real Jamaican Dundada shit.
Really?
And he was like,
yeah, dreadlocks?
No, he doesn't have dreadlocks, but he's very Jamaican.
Oh, okay.
And so JJ was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to love you for the rest of my life. Or as they say in Jamaica, Wagwan, you come.
He did? Oh, man.
I was like, he's in like Flynn, bro. Like, I think JJ might be more valid in Jamaica. I'm not from Jamaica, but he's definitely more valid in Jamaica than I am.
That's funny.
He went out on the streets, broke the curfew. They had a curfew. He went out and fucking lived his life. In the street, in the real streets of Jamaica.
Really?
He's like, you want to come? I was like, he didn't say it like that.
Oh, but
like, yo, if he won. Oh, he had the braids in and everything. JJ was on a different level in Jamaica.
Hey, yo, Shatta.
Yeah, yo, yo, young boy. Yo, if he come to the, yo, pussy. I was like, yo, I can't break the rules, man. Right. I'm sorry. I'm staying on the resort. On some real shit, though. It was beautiful.
That's what's up, man.
And we've been friends for like a decade. So to see the growth, it was all, you know, we had like some touching moments, like some real adult, like, hey man, you know, to see your growth and progression is beautiful.
Yeah.
Real shit. Like, it was real. He was a king that weekend. I mean, he's a king always, but like, he was royalty for that weekend, him and his queen. So it was a beautiful time. Fran, I also wanted to talk to you about inflation.
All right.
Right. Everything, the price of everything is going up.
Yeah.
And to no surprise, for the however many time, Netflix has announced that the price is going up again. And I just want to say, this time around, I'm going to have to see. Because Netflix isn't Netflixing like it used to for you to hit me with a price gouge.
What is it now? What is it going to?
It was 15. I think they're going, they might go up 17, 18.
Damn.
They might be close to $20.
That's like $10 like the last 5 years.
Oh, they're going crazy. And my thing is, they're not putting out content that's dope enough.
They got too many competitors now, man.
Yeah, well, that's what it is.
Yeah.
But they're not HBO Max.
No.
HBO Max has been hitting me with heat.
I haven't been on Netflix.
Yeah, yeah. No, Netflix is Netflix is a role player at this point.
Yeah.
Netflix is full of a bunch of shit. It's all mediocre shit. It's all B movies, and it's like, well, that was all right.
Yeah.
Even the show that you came in when you came in and I was watching it,
yeah,
it's like, it's all right. That's their new show. Whatever the thing with the black dude with the videotapes. I'm like, this is cool. Like, I like it. Mm. But it's not WandaVision.
Mm.
You know, it's not The Mandalorian. Disney Plus has Star Wars.
Yeah, Mandalorian's my shit.
Uh-huh. HBO Max, Euphoria just came back out. And HBO Max has a bunch of other, HBO is HBO. So, and then all the other ones like Peacock, that's $6 still. I'm sure it'll go up, but they're still reasonable.
Yeah.
So for Netflix to be, Stranger Things hasn't come back out yet. They don't have anything that's juggernauting where I'm like, no, I
need. Where's you?
You came and went. And you know I love you.
Yeah.
You know how I feel. Victoria Petretti. Man, God, I hope it didn't end how, I don't want to spoil, but I hope she's okay.
Wait, it is another season though, right?
Oh, there's definitely going to be another season.
Better.
But even you is like, you is not, it's great. Let me calm down.
Yeah.
When you is out, I'm on Netflix. So you is one of those. But they don't have that many of those for a price gouge.
Yeah, man, Netflix was my shit when I was like binging Prison Break, when I was binging Dexter.
Yeah, but you've done it.
I've done that. And what was the show with the girl that was committed suicide? What was that?
13 Reasons Why?
13 you watched Reasons that show? Why. I watched, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I watched that show and that was it. There's nothing else on there I really need to see.
Yeah.
I have been going off on the, I'm on this stand-up kick right now.
Oh, they are. So that's the home of that.
I have been watching
that. They're the home of that.
I've been watching that.
There's nobody
Sebastian
even. Maniscalco? Yeah, yeah.
Happy
Why?
I was dying.
What do you do that?
Yeah, I was crying.
Who the fuck are you? What are you doing?
Yeah, he's hilarious. Fun. He's a funny guy. That's a funny guy. But yeah, I don't. Yeah, I'm gonna have to think about it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to look at the bank account when it hits.
Well, you have like everything, so.
Yeah, but I don't like them. Don't switch the game up on me like this so late, you know, in the situation, especially. And also, I listen. It's COVID. People struggling out here. Don't try to hit us for another $3. It's hard times out here, and you're not putting out heat enough to justify. Listen,
they don't do many specials. That's the problem.
Yeah, they got to pay all these comedians. Man. It's crazy. That's don't put that on us. Listen, Euphoria just came out. If HBO Max was like, hey, I know you're paying $13 or whatever, it's gonna be $16. Then I gotta go. Oh, damn. Well, I do want to watch Euphoria. So go ahead and take the three. Netflix doesn't have anything. I haven't even started the fucking The Witcher. I haven't started the next season of The Witcher. I don't really care. That's their big thing right now. So they don't have anything to justify you hitting us our pockets for extra money. So I gotta think about it, Netflix. Just respectfully. I gotta let y'all know, man. I just got Discovery Plus. It's like that's $7. That's it. Bunch of shit on there. Documentaries and all types of stuff on there. Great. Sharks and dolphins and whales.
What don't you have?
That's a good question. If I don't have it, I don't know what it is. If I know it, I have it.
You got it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If I know it, I have it.
Crazy.
I got Luminary. I got all the fucking
podcasts.
Yeah, I got our podcast apps that you pay extra for.
Why?
I don't even listen to or watch any of the stuff. I just have it, man. I don't know. I still have Shudder. It's like a horror subscription.
You still pay for it?
Well, we had a free trial because they did a sponsorship and I got a login, but I don't think it was a lifetime one. I might be dissing them, and I think I might still have it might have been a lifetime login.
Right, they might hook you up.
Yeah, no, it might have been a lifetime. Shout out to Shudder, man. You know, great horror original content on there. Shudder's great.
If you're charging me.
If you're charging me, that's a whole different conversation. But I think I still have the login. But my point is, I have all of the, if I know it exists, then I have it. So, but Netflix is, you know, this is the second time we've had this talk in like a year, I feel. Yeah. This is happening too frequently. And I think they're trying to take advantage of it because the people are still in the house. And now Omicron is kind of putting people back on the brink of, you know, going back in the house. And so they're like, okay, well, let's go ahead and gouge them out a little bit before they have to be here and watching TV again, which I hope doesn't happen.
I doubt you.
Everybody to be
though.
Safe, but you know, huh?
I doubt you cancel it though.
Yeah, I'm just venting. At the end of the day, I'm like, oh man, some other show came out, a Korean drama. I'm like, oh, well, I guess I'll stick around. I just talk shit. But anyway, friend, to touch on a little thing you talked about earlier when you were out in the streets and you saw some homeless out in the street. I wanted to talk about a story that I'm not trying to scold anybody, but this happens a lot. And I just feel like I want to put out a bit of a PSA. So there's a guy named Johnny Walker from Houston, Texas. He was a homeless individual, unhoused. I don't know the proper term, but he was a guy, you know, struggling. And there was a police chase that happened. This police deputy was chasing after somebody, got in an accident. And Johnny Walker, this homeless man, pulled the deputy out of the car. Mm. And now he's being praised and heralded as he should be. But what happens a lot in our society is a homeless person or a person struggling with addiction or any of these things, they have to prove their value to society before we open the gates to them and make them feel like a human again. It happened with the, what's up, baby? Take me out to dinner. Yeah. Hey, guys, he has an apartment now.
Yeah.
His life has really turned around from that video. The guy with the golden voice, one of the most famous examples, the guy that looks like Sammy Davis Jr. And he's like, WJX5. But he was just a homeless dude the day before. And then he does something and society goes, oh, wow, you're not just like a bum. You matter. And I think it's great. Johnny Walker, he's being like, you know, they're going to give him the key to the city. I don't know if they're actually going to, but you know, that whole thing.
Yeah.
Put him on the news and free food for life and all of these things. And we tokenize homeless people. We tokenize addicts when they do something that we deem to be worthy and something that tugs at our heartstrings or something that goes like, see, this is, you know, they're not all annoying or whatever you think about homeless people. And I just think that the tokenization of people struggling like that is a dangerous attitude to have, because it allows you to continue to dismiss the massive swaths of homeless people waiting for them to do something that makes you pay attention to them when they're human beings. They're worthy of a time. Even in like saying, hey man, I'm sorry, I don't have any cash on me. Even that is a dignified response, as opposed to being like, oh my God, covering the side of your face as they walk by your car, like, oh my God, pull up some. Mm-hmm. It's treating them like pariahs, you know. And so I think it's great that Johnny Walker helped out that police deputy. But when you put him on a pedestal the way that you do, it reinforces that you got to let them prove that they're worthy of help, and then help the ones that are worthy of help, because some of them aren't worthy of help. And I don't like that attitude. So shout out to Johnny Walker in Houston, Texas. But let's treat all people going through a hard time with dignity and respect. That's my only point that I'm trying to make.
I guess only because people look at them that way is because, like, they're, you know, they look dirty. They got
it's, dirty hard, it's hard it's to like, look you, that reality
how,
in the face.
Yeah, it, but how, you know, how is a homeless person supposed to look if they don't have a home?
Absolutely.
That's crazy.
Absolutely.
So it's like, I get it. It's just like, if you have a, do something good, like you said, or if you have some type of hidden talent, it's like, oh, we should help this. We should help you.
Yeah.
Out of like the hundreds of thousands of people that are homeless across the country. I do get it though. I feel like around this time where it's freezing cold outside, I can't even imagine.
It's tough, bro.
What they have to deal with, man. It's tough. That's crazy.
And I remember reading an article a few years back about it being cold like this, and then they sleep on heated grates, and then they get burned from the grates. Yeah. You know, it's like, damn, you know, it's like, you can't, and I spoke about this when I took some like clothes and stuff to some homeless shelters, but I spoke about it on the podcast where I go like, finding a middle ground of comfort is such a, we take it for granted. Like if I'm sleeping in the middle of the night and maybe I should have had two blankets on me, but I only put one blanket on me. The thought of me, like when I get them, you know, groggy and it's dark and I'm trying to keep my eyes closed, and I just go grab the second blanket and throw it over me, and then I go right back to sleep. Cause now I've upped my level of comfort.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to being on the street and you're going to bed with some tattered blanket that has holes in it, and that's the best it's gonna get.
Yeah.
There's no thermostat. You go, it's cold in here. Let me crank this up to right where I want it to be.
Yeah.
That perfect bowl of porridge, that we take that for granted in society a lot, as people who can get that perfect bowl of porridge. Because for some people, it's not enough. And there is no way to find a middle ground. It's too cold or it's too hot. There's a lot of people out there that don't know warmth.
Yeah.
You know? It's taken for granted. I know what it's like to be perfectly warm. I know what it's like to be perfectly full.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what, I ate too much.
Yeah,
my stomach hurts. We take that for granted, man. Yeah. You know, like to take
everything for granted.
Oh yeah. Man, do you know how disrespectful it is to eat until you are in pain?
Just too much.
Cool. You know, it's like, and we take that for granted. There's some people that just, this isn't enough, but it's all I'm gonna get.
Yeah,
you know, and so we take that for granted, and it's never more apparent than when it's cold like this outside. So
yeah, man, they really just be out there. It's like, I'd be like, shit,
no shoes on. No, the ground
all night.
Cold.
Oh man, when the temperatures is oh my goodness, when water start to freeze up. Oh man,
crazy, bro. And there's people out there every night.
Every night.
And hey, I get out of my car and I give one dude a beanie. I give one dude a pair of socks. I'm not solving the homeless crisis, right, but it's something. It's doing something, you know. And that's my only point. Is like, don't wait for the guy to sing a Backstreet Boys song or Boys to Men in front of a dumpster fire, you hear them harmonizing perfectly before you go like, hey, you know what? You guys deserve a McDonald's sandwich.
Yeah.
Because you are doing something that makes me happy, makes me smile. So I'm gonna do something nice for you guys. It's like, listen, man, they all deserve help.
Yeah.
And you know, some of them are gonna be ungrateful for your help. But you know something? They're gonna go sleep in a tent tonight. So if they get a little snappy at you or they have some mental problems and their approach isn't the most gentle, just remember that you're going to go home tonight and fucking turn your thermostat to 76, right where you want it to be, put on a heated blanket, and go to sleep in a bed.
Yeah, 76 is hot, jeez.
Yeah, I know. My real comfort is like basically cold. Even in the wintertime, I'm like, I like it like 71.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I like it like 71, and then I throw the blanket on. Yep. And that's sometimes I got to get up in the middle of the night and put the double blankets on. But this is all privileged talk.
Yeah, sorry.
You know? We don't want to disrespect people that don't know what it's like to, you know, get the extra Scooby Doo blanket out of the cupboard, yeah, you know, and warm up, you know. So anyway, a lot of content coming to Patreon 2022.
Yeah,
I'm excited. We got big plans for 2022. AMP Radio starting to pick up. Somebody tried to call in live while I was recording, Fran. I couldn't figure out the buttons, but next time I will figure it out.
You like said that out loud or what?
Oh yeah, there's a number. I have a number. It's you know.
Oh, you just full. I've heard it yet.
Oh yeah, well it's fine. I got a number. I call. You know, I tell them call in.
Well, you haven't given me access to Patreon, so I can't get into.
Don't say it like that. Don't say it like that.
I don't have the info. Okay, Every time I get in, I'll be like, hey man, you got to send me the confirmation code.
Listen, babe.
I can't get in, man.
I'm moving and grooving, babe. Okay. Everything I'm doing,
you gotta get me in, man.
I know, that's on me. But we don't have to tell them that.
Oh,
you
sorry.
Know, you know, that's behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah. Hey guys. I'm not freezing.
I'm
getting pushed out of Patreon content, guys.
I'm not freezing out of Patreon.
Yeah, man. I want this AMP Radio, man. Hey.
I appreciate the support, man. I'll get you. I'll write down a sheet of paper like Wi-Fi password.
I'm gonna call in.
Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate the support. But we got conspiracy. People are enjoying that. More of those coming. I plan on a lot of shit, man. I got big plans for 2022. Crime Con's coming up.
Yeah, man. We'll
get some content out of Crime Con.
Yeah.
Know you're excited about Crime Con.
What? Can't
give me
wait.
A blast, man. I'm excited about 2022. A lot of things to look forward to, and a lot of the things will be coming exclusively, if not just out of the gate, to Patreon. So thank you guys for the support. And let's go ahead and kick things off. All right, Patreon. We're going to go ahead and start at the most recent name I can think of. We're going to start with Judith P. Shout out to Judith P. Thank you for joining the Patreon. Hope you're enjoying the content over there. Words. We don't have enough words to even show our gratitude. Up next, we got Kayla B. One of the most unique ways I've ever seen Kayla spelled. It's K-A-E. Love. Never heard that before, so it's interesting. Sarah C, shout out to you, Sarah C. I see what you did there. You joined the Patreon and you made a smart move. Up next, we got Tay L. Tay L, never taking L's when you join the Patreon. Up next, we got Megan. That's it. That's all she needs. It's like J-Lo. Up next, we got Maggie. Once again, that's all it is. It's like Zendaya. Up next, we got Colin W. Now, Fran, there was a gentleman named Colin who inspired me in middle school to start my candy hocking operation in high school. I learned from him very early on. He was a very forward-thinking business mind, selling candy to the youth.
Yeah.
And so I always respect the name Colin.
I still see him to this day.
Yeah? Does he still sell candy? Did he take that on to probably selling candy. Different kind of candy?
Probably,
huh?
I still see him here. Selling something. Always talk for like a couple minutes.
Yeah.
It's always a good time.
He's probably selling something still. Legally or legally, I don't know. Hey, I don't know. Hey, you know, he's probably like a businessman. Yeah, you know, I don't know. You know something? And that's internalized racism inside of me, Fran. Let me check that. Because you know something? He might have took that and he might have started his own business.
Probably.
Let me go ahead and take that back. Shout out to Colin. I'm sure you don't sell nose candy. I'm sure you sell energy drinks or something, whatever you invented. Because you can invent things, Colin. All the Colins out there, you're all one. Up next, we got Christina D. Shout out to you, Christina. Hold it down for us over there on the Patreon. You see anybody talking crazy, you handle it. That seems like a name that gets business done. Up next, we got Jai Sierra. I think I'm so confident I got that right. Jai Sierra W. Shout out to Jai Sierra W. Much appreciated. Thank you. Much love to you. I hope I said your name right. One. And two, I hope you're enjoying the content over there. Up next, we got Sarah A. Shout out to you, Sarah A. Thank you very much again to you. And happy new year, 2022. Up next, we got Krista. Shout out to Krista. Yeah, Krista. Hey, Fran. Looking into my Crystal Ball. Guess what? She's going to be on there for the rest of the year at least, oh, to really? Infinity and beyond. Okay. Saw it in there. Shake it up. Still, Crystal Ball's coming in clear. Up next, we got Ashley G. That's what she is, and that's also her last name. Much appreciation to you. Shout out to you. And lastly, we got Juliana G. I almost said the whole thing. Shout out to Juliana G. Much love and appreciation to everybody that's joined the Patreon in the new year. I think that they've been incentivized by the new content. Conspiracy is good. It's really buzzing, man. People are enjoying it. I'm excited to do more of them. I'm excited to drop the ones that we have in the tank. Shout out to Eric Cavell, the incredible artist that did the logo and it's all fire. Of our other logos. He did the Affirmative Murder logo. Good friend, better artist. Yeah, man, Patreon, I'm excited. I really, with me doing AMP Radio, I want to get you set up. Maybe us having a virtual house party in a couple of weeks will get you some stuff over to your place. I want you to think of something that you want to do exclusively for Patreon.
Okay.
Whether it's, I remember you said something about interviewing Sophie or asking her questions or something like that. I know there was something like that. And I think that people would like to hear even once a month, whether it's like Ask Fran or something. I don't know. We should get you like your own thing going.
Yeah.
You know,
that'd be cool.
Yeah, we just provide people some content. I can hit Eric up, or you know, I can go into my. I got Canva skills.
Okay,
you know, I got Canva skills.
I'd rather have Eric, but okay.
All right, well, yeah, it'll be better, but you have to pay. He's my friend. He still charges me to do stuff. So I'll tell you like this: if you bring me an idea that's fire,
yeah,
now I'll get you a logo made.
All right,
but if you bring me something that's like, no, this is just cute, and I don't know how consistent I'll be with it, then I'll probably make you a little. Low budget.
A little disrespectful.
No, you know something.
Cute little.
Let me check myself again, because you know something. That's internalized self-deprecation. Yeah, I'm man. Putting on to you. Whatever idea you come up with, King. Hey, King.
Yeah.
Whatever idea you come up with, King, is going to be glorious.
I'm like that.
And I don't need to put little in front of anything. I don't like seeing people do that kind of stuff. You open up a business. Oh, you got yourself a little business? No, yeah. I got myself a whole ass adult business that I started.
Yeah.
Bitch. So that's you talking to me. I'm talking to myself like that for you.
You patronizing me?
Huh?
You patronizing?
No, I'm patronizing myself because that was disrespectful to you.
Yeah.
Little and cute or whatever. Yeah. No, you're going to come with a fire idea. And if it's money to be put behind it, guess what? Papa's going to take care of that. Money's going to be fronted. I got you.
All right.
Got you, baby.
Appreciate that, man.
Yeah, no, that's still Jamaican energy. I'm coming. I don't know why I'm pointing my finger at you like a gun.
Yeah.
But I'm still fresh from Jamaica. And my friend's wife, her husband, I mean, her dad, he put the energy in everybody. So you, King. You come up with I turned the gun a different way on you. Hey, look, King. Yeah. Hey, King. You come up with an idea for the Patreon, and we're going to back it to produce it to the top level.
Yeah.
I promise you that.
Okay.
No little. Not little. Yeah. Your ideas are big, and I appreciate you.
All right, man. I get it.
Put it away. Holster the gun.
Please.
Yeah, my bad. Sorry. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get into some fucked up shit. So stick around.
Affirmative Murder is brought to you by My Life in a Book. With Mother's Day right around the corner, I just know you guys are thinking about a truly special gift for your mom. But let me tell you about a pretty priceless gift. MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book that you could pass down from generation to generation, which I think is a pretty awesome memento to leave behind. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you want to ask. Your mother or the mother can either type her response or record her voice. MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It would be like preserving her voice and her stories for all of eternity. Your mom's giving you a lifetime of stories, and this is your chance to give her a way to share them. I'm in the middle of MyLifeInABook.com journey, and I'm really excited to see how it turns out. I've been asking some pretty thought-provoking and funny questions, and, you know, I'm excited to see the response, but I'm also just excited to have the physical book in my hands and know that I can look back on it in 20, 30 years. The interface is super user-friendly. The questions are super easy to set up. It's a breeze of a process. So what I need you to do is check out MyLifeInABook.com. That's MyLifeInABook.com. And use code AMP. That's A, M as in Mother's Day. P at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for the mom in your life this Mother's Day. One more time, that's mylifeinabook.com. Use code AMP for 10% off today.
Once again, folks, before I jump into my story, I want to make another announcement. We are doing a virtual house party 2 Thursdays from now, January 27th, 7:30 to whenever. Yeah. 7:30 to question mark. You know what I mean, friend? Ha ha. Put those Angry Orchards up in you, get you right. You know, and we'll be ready to party all night long, man. Yeah, man. But no, honestly, it's a Thursday, so we'll probably be done by like 9:30. But yeah, no, it's going to be super fun. We're going to do some Q&As, play some games. It's going to be fun time, hang out. Super fun. Keep an eye out exclusively for Patreon.
Yep.
So if you're not on the Patreon, join the Patreon. Join us for the fun virtual house party when we plan. Fucking doing.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
Doing in the butt. Don't. Cabbage patch. All that stuff. It's gonna be fun.
2 weeks, people. Yeah, two weeks.
2 weeks. So yeah, join us on there. It's gonna be super fun time. Now, Fran, my affirmative murder this week was actually fell into my email as a like a blessing. Fell into the affirmative murder email. I was checking them out. This was a case that was submitted. The research was all done by a professional website that they, you know, these two people that I'm about to shout out, they have, and it's an awesome website, and they, you know, cover cases and break cases and talk about cases that aren't, that are underreported. Their names are Megan and Anthony Smith. Their website is called Mayhem in the Desert. And so mayheminthedesert.com. Like I said, they're spreading awareness on a lot of underreported cases. And I thank them for bringing awareness to their of this story to me. Mm-hmm. All of the research that I have was hand delivered to me from them. I took their story and all the information that I got was from their reporting. So I want to shout them out and go check out their website. Again, Megan and Anthony over at Mayhem in the Desert. Shout out to you guys. Thank you for bringing this case to my attention. And here we go. So Yolanda Brown was an ambitious young woman, originally born in Louisiana, who spent most of her life in Las Vegas. I don't like to be the guy that's like, you know, my grandmother lives in Vegas over and over again, but she does. That's where she lives. So I know a little bit about Vegas, and it's a very unique place career-wise. Like, basically, it's a vampire lifestyle. Like, day is night, night is day. Mm. So most people, you know, that are local and doing the career paths that are available in Vegas start their work at like 5 o'clock, and are out, you know, working until 3 o'clock in the morning or so. Mm. And then they come home, go to sleep, sleep through the day.
Yeah.
You know, so that it's a nightlife type of Sin City. That's the whole thing. And another interesting thing, like my grandmother's been trying to get me to live in Vegas for most of my life. And it's an interesting place, right? Like, when I went through my breakup and I was kind of uncertain about what my next move was going to be, mm-hmm. even though my job is very much here and I like my job, even if I want to dial it back to be more of a full-time podcaster, even if I will never quit my job. But I was thinking about it, because you can move to Vegas, you can be a valet driver, you can be a bartender, like jobs that are good jobs,
yeah.
are great jobs in Vegas. There. But there's yeah. still, you can make six figures in Vegas being a valet driver or a bartender, at least $65,000-$70,000 a year, valet parking cars.
Yeah,
you get a job at the right casino. You know, and you know, those high rollers come in and they have a, you know, an escort with them or a beautiful young lady, and they just go, here's $100, park my Lamborghini close.
Yeah.
And if that happens 10 times a night, you walk home with $1,000.
Yeah.
You know, just on any given night, it could be like that, let alone being a bartender constantly.
Yeah.
You know, so it's an interesting life, but a lot of people end up falling into casino life, which is what Yolanda ended up doing for her job. Mm. Yolanda ended up working as a pit bookkeeper at the Las Vegas Hilton. In 1991, Yolanda gave birth to her first child, Jonathan Jr. She soon found herself involved in court actions that would last over the next few years, trying to enforce a child support obligation against Jonathan's father. So just to paint the picture, Yolanda's doing great. You know, she's got herself a good job, stable. Mm-hmm. She's driving. She has her own car. She's 24. She's like in her 20s, early 20s. But she had a kid with a guy that she didn't end up dating, and she's going through that whole thing. So that's the first hiccup in her situation. But besides that, she is a fully functional, she's doing her thing. She's on her girl boss shit. In July of 1996, Yolanda found herself in court once again, but this time for a custody hearing over her infant daughter, Asia, that she had with another man, Alexander Green. While working at the Hilton, she entered into a relationship with Alexander. And before long, Yolanda was pregnant. Alexander had allowed his mother in California to retain custody of their infant daughter, prompting Yolanda to retain an attorney to bring a custody case to Alexander. Alexander's attorney argued that the couple had agreed to grant the parental grandmother custody of Asia, while Yolanda's counsel informed the court that no such agreement ever existed.
And that's so, his mom.
That's his mom.
Yeah.
And it's a he said, she said thing. Because they could have discussed it, but there's no paperwork.
Right.
That's the thing that's sticky about those, about I don't even know, custody court, parental court, whatever. If you don't have it in writing, anybody could be lying.
Yeah.
They said, she said I could take her longer. And all the person could go, no, I didn't.
Yeah.
You don't have, what proof do you have? A word? Did you record it? Nothing. This is the 90s. There's, you had some big ass camcorder. So he's saying, we agreed that she could stay with my mom. Asia could stay with my mom in California. And Yolanda's saying, I did not say that. Bring my daughter back to Las Vegas.
What if somebody says that? Those are the plan they're lying. No, if somebody goes, I didn't say that. You don't have proof.
Well, I'm just saying.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
but if somebody's first response instead of going, that's a lie, is like, do you have proof?
Yeah,
I would find that to be suspicious. That's not. Yeah. That's not a response to. Right. But you said that I could do this. Did you film it?
Yeah.
It's like no, I didn't. I didn't film it. Well then, hey, I didn't say it then. But that's not what I'm saying happened in this case here. So like I said, Yolanda saying, I did not say you could give my daughter to your mother in California and I want her back. So Judge Gaston found that the parents of the child have a superior custody right over the grandparents and ordered the return of the child to Yolanda. So basically the judge said, I don't care what agreement you had, if that's real or not. Yolanda wants the kid back. She's the mom. And so your grandmother doesn't matter. Her rights are below the mom's rights. So if the mom wants the kid back, you got to bring the kid back.
Yeah.
The judge also ordered Alexander to pay $406 per month in child support and granted him visitation rights with Asia every other weekend once she was returned to Nevada. Another hearing was held pertaining to the case in August of that year. The judge was unable to conceal his frustration when he learned that Asia had not been returned to her mother. The judge began grilling Alexander as to why he had not followed the court's orders. Alexander offered up a carefree response, telling the judge that I have no control over my mother, which, been there. I get the, I'm a kid. Mm-hmm. My mom is my mom. I can't tell my mom what to do.
Yeah.
You can't tell it to a judge. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't say, hey, judge, I know you gave me a lawful order, but mom's going to do what mom's going to do. You know what I'm saying? It's 1996. You know what I'm saying? That's fat. That's what I'm going to call it.
Fat.
That's not fat. My mom does what she does. Nah, I mean, that's right. That's 90s.
I don't know.
It's been a while since the 90s, huh? But it's something to 90s slang.
Yeah.
Mom's going to do what mom's going to do. Zoom, zoom, zoom in the boom, boom. And then, then his gumby cut, his hair is like sloped to the side and he's got an 8-ball jacket on in court. So he said all that to the judge. Judge, I have no control over my mother. The judge was ready to enter another order.
This see, the judge hit his ass.
What the fuck are you talking about?
The judge is about to punch him in his
face. Well, listen, he's banging the guy. Stop running manning in my court now. You stop running manning in my court right now, and you take this seriously.
Yeah.
So the judge was ready to put in another order for, of what happens next. And this time he informed Alexander that he had until the following Saturday to bring Asia back from California and turn over custody to Yolanda at a downtown police station. The judge informed Alexander that if he did not follow through with this, he would be incarcerated at the Clark County Detention Center until custody was given back to Yolanda.
Yeah.
So after he said that, this new piece of information kind of prompted Alexander he adopted a new attitude after he said that. So after the judge was like, I'll send you to jail. Then Alexander, his gumby cut, it like fell off. It disintegrated into a little fade and he had a tie grew from his neck. And he's like, well, actually, Your Honor, I have been planning on taking a pilgrimage to California to procure my daughter from my mother, maternal a figure, and bring her back to Las Vegas post haste. That's what he informed the judge. Like, I was actually, since you say jail, I was about to, something that's funny? I just was talking about going up there tomorrow and getting her and bringing her back. It's funny you say that. So it's crazy. She'll be back. So, his whole tone changed. And he also said before Alexander even had a chance to, change his tone fully, the judge also said, okay, well, you know, well, when you go get her, if your mom gives you any trouble, please inform her that I will happily issue a bench warrant for her arrest if she does not give the child over to you.
Yeah,
and she will go to jail as well, your mother. That'll be fat. He didn't say that, but you know. So he told that, all that to Alexander, and then a status check a few days later after the hearing was canceled upon the attorneys informing the judge that that Asia had been returned to Yolanda as of August 3rd, 1996.
Okay.
So he got her back. He got her back before that following Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
The threat of jail will put some pep in your step.
Absolutely.
Oh, the threat of jail will put some pep in your step. Every time I watch Beyond Scared Straight highlights, sometimes there's kids in there that are, I'm like, oh, you'll be back. But the ones that jail puts the pep in their step, it works.
Yeah.
The ones that really, no, I don't want to, don't leave me here. Those kids, that makes it my favorite. But then some of the kids are like, no, I am from Hoover Street. I am a crib.
I will fight you.
Yeah.
You're grown ass. I will fight you.
Those kids, I'm like, oh, yeah, no, they'll be back. Yeah. This isn't going to work at all.
You're not going to scare them straight.
It's too late. You should have got him at 8. Now he's 15.
Yeah.
He's too hard. He's too hardened now. It's going to take a lot more than a weekend of people putting Kool-Aid on their lips and making it like it's lipstick. This kid needs a lot more therapy than that.
Yeah.
But the kids that it works on, it's glorious television. So, yeah, the threat of jail still works. So 2 months later, in October of 1996, Yolanda went to work at the Las Vegas Hilton. She worked her shift without incident and left the Hilton property shortly after she got off work at 3 a.m. She never returned home at 3990 Lake Forest Lane. Yolanda's family contacted police to report her as missing at around 9:30 a.m. on October 9th, 1996. So 6 hours later, which is, I'm not making judgments on, sometimes it's been a couple days and stuff, but she lives with her family.
Oh, okay.
So when she gets off at 3, it's now 9:30. She hasn't been home. We don't know of anybody that she's dating or anything.
And the baby's home.
Yeah. Also fantastic point. Yes. So they immediately filed a missing person.
Yeah.
Or called the, I don't know if you can file a missing person's report 6 hours, but they called the police. They got the police involved immediately.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, later that afternoon, a UPS driver was traveling along Route 159 near the Red Rock Conservation Area, and as he approached mile marker 15, he spotted what appeared to be someone lying in the dirt not far from the road. The driver pulled his truck to the shoulder of Route 159 to check on the person lying in the desert. Upon approaching the motionless figure, the driver realized that he had discovered the body of a young woman. He returned to Las Vegas and contacted the authorities. It was not long before police identified the body as Yolanda Brown.
Mm.
Homicide detectives scouring the scene of the crime noted that the killer made no efforts to conceal Yolanda's body. So there was no tarp over her. She wasn't buried.
Yeah.
She was just left out there. Investigators also located Yolanda's purse about a half a mile from where her body was discovered. The medical examiner determined that the cause of death had been strangulation. And it's my recommendation later, but there's a documentary on the hunt for the Chicago Strangler on Discovery Plus right now. Fran, you know, we interviewed Jordan Sherritt at CrimeCon last year. He's very heavily involved and believes that there are multiple serial killers currently active in Chicago. And that whole thing is ongoing. And one thing that is in that docuseries that is noted, they're speaking about Chicago, but I think it goes across the board in general, is in Chicago, a place with a very high murder rate, strangulations make up 1% of murders in Chicago.
Yeah.
Some years it makes up 0.5%. Strangulation is a very uncommon way to kill somebody, especially if it's a robbery or something of that nature.
Right.
Something where you're trying to get in and get out. It's very personal.
Yeah.
You know, but to just be strangled, not be robbed, it points to, I just wanted to kill you.
Yeah,
and that makes it incredibly, it incredibly personal. Right. So, like I said, according to Las Vegas Police Lieutenant Larry Spinoza, she wasn't sexually assaulted and she wasn't robbed, which ruled out a lot of scenarios as to how this young mother met such a tragic fate. I mean, it boils it down to basically,
whoever it was, she knew that person.
That's what you would think.
Yeah.
So another hearing was held in Yolanda's custody case against Alexander Green on December 3rd, 1996. She was found murdered in October, but the custody thing is still up in the air. Now one of the parents isn't here, so, you know, custody has to be decided. The hearing began on a somber note, with the court acknowledging Yolanda's death. Present at the hearing was Yolanda's younger sister, Cynthia Brown, and a representative from the Family Mediation Center, La Deanna Gamble. Miss Gamble relayed to the court that the homicide detective working Yolanda's case had informed her that Alexander Green was the primary suspect in the murder. This is at the custody hearing that this was being announced.
Was he was dead.
He was there. Okay. Yeah. They couldn't do anything, but it was basically like a piece of character information.
Yeah.
Like, hey, just so you guys, Your Honor, just so you know, Alexander Green, who you're thinking about giving custody to baby Asia, is the primary suspect in the murder of her mother.
Yeah.
Take with that information, do with it what you will. So Judge Gaston informed Alexander that Asia would remain in the care of Yolanda's mother and sister until the police concluded their investigation.
Good.
Very good. Check this shit out. This is crazy. A hearing to determine the status of the investigation was set for the end of the month. A final hearing was held at the end of the month, like I said, on December 31st, 1996. The hearing grew tense as the judge reviewed a report prepared by the family mediation specialist. Alexander had previously informed Miss Gamble that the mediation was no longer necessary because he and Yolanda had reconciled. The mediation specialist's report also indicated that Detective Morgan of the Metro Homicide Division still viewed Alexander as the prime suspect in Yolanda's death. The court then recounted Alexander's prior arrest for various crimes, including aiming a firearm in public and obstructing a police officer. Now, these are not particularly violent crimes per se. I mean, aiming a gun in public is pretty violent, but it's not a domestic violence or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it all goes to character and all of that stuff.
In your criminal history, though.
Yeah, but sometimes people's criminal history is brought up and it's weaponized against them in scenarios that it doesn't need to be. Like when somebody gets out of jail, they serve their time, and then you have to go tell McDonald's that, you know.
But this fits.
You got into you assaulted somebody.
Yeah, but this fits, though.
But that's why I say, but not really, she wasn't shot. What was his other crime? Aiming a gun in public and obstructing a police officer, which could be anything. Just talking back, just not following orders. You know what I mean?
Listen, it sounded like he had some type of...
He has a criminal history.
He has these anger of aggressive outbursts, though.
Sure. Sure. Okay. That's fine. I still stand by my point, but that's fine. I get it. So the judge ruled that it was in Asia's best interest to remain in the care of her aunt. This is where I said it was crazy a while back, but he decided that it was in the best interest for Asia to remain in the care of her aunt, with Alexander still having visitation. So he's still the prime suspect, according to some detectives still working the case. He's the prime suspect in Yolanda's murder, but he's still, and his criminal history has been brought up in front of the court and all this kind of stuff. But the judge didn't revoke his rights. I also don't know how easy that is for a judge to do. I feel like you have to have pretty like damning evidence to strip somebody of their rights for mm-hmm. visitation. So he got to keep his rights. And so this shit was crazy, right? So he got to keep his visitation rights. The court warned Cynthia to be cautious when performing custody exchanges with Alexander and to have a third party present. So in that statement, they acknowledged that they think that Alexander's dangerous and you should not deliver the child to him alone. Mm-hmm. You should bring somebody there with you to keep you safe, but he can still have his child.
Yeah.
Which I think that's, like I said, that's crazy.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, we acknowledge that he might be dangerous. He might have killed this child's mother.
He shouldn't be around that baby at all.
No. So they gave him limited visitation, but they still gave him visitation. And they told him that when you bring the child to him, have somebody there, have some eyes there and stuff for safety.
To just drop her off or to watch?
To drop her off. To drop her off.
It should be a third.
Have somebody there, not for the baby, have somebody there for you as the person that's dropping her off to make sure he doesn't attack you.
But I mean, like, it should be somebody else there to
It should be supervised visits.
Yeah.
With like a... Somebody from CPS or something.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Damn, I heard that.
Oh. It's nothing funny about it. Oh, it's nothing funny about it.
That one.
Oh, my pinky's numb. Oh. Okay, no, we're good. No, we're good. Let's finish this. Ooh. No, I'm good. So. Oh, it's getting more numb. Oh, it's like it's gone. It's like my pinky's gone. No arrests were ever made in Yolanda Brown's murder, but over a decade after her body was found in the desert near Red Rock, Alexander Green drove out to State Route 157 on a night in January 2009. Shortly before midnight, Alexander fired a single gun round from a handgun into his chest. His body was located by police, and his death was ruled a suicide. Mm. So,
in his chest.
He shot himself in his chest. He was the prime suspect, but he was never arrested. So that might not mean anything. And his death could be completely unrelated to Yolanda Brown. I don't think that it was. Yeah. I don't think it's unrelated. I think that 13 years of looking at the child that you had with this woman and her asking where her mom is and all of that stuff, I think it might have caught up to him and he, you know, couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah, man. It's just with these, with those type of cases, it's like, it's hard because you can go and speculate, hey, it was him.
But yeah, but you never
technically you can't because you're innocent until proven guilty in court.
Yes, so, you'll never get confirmation.
Yeah.
And he was not found guilty.
Yeah.
I want to reiterate that.
Yeah.
Alexander Green was not found guilty. He did not go to jail. Yeah. He did not go to prison for the murder of Yolanda Brown. Yolanda Brown's murder is still unsolved. But my money's on Alexander Green.
Yeah.
Now, why he was never arrested, that's a good question. Maybe it wasn't him. That's all. It's always that speculation. There's always that what if. Because.
But it didn't go to court, though. It didn't go to court, right?
I don't know. They weren't able to find all the details in this case.
Right. It was at the hearing, which had nothing to do with it.
Yes, this
it
was
brought up.
The information that I have is from a custody hearing.
That's what I'm saying. It was at the custody hearing, but I mean, like,
I don't know if he ever went to stand trial for her murder.
It was brought up, but it had nothing to do with the custody hearing, so you can't really do anything. You can't just.
Yes, it was all brought up to like slander him
right.
So he couldn't have his child.
Right.
But none of it was in the court of law pertaining to Yolanda Brown's murder.
Right. So
I don't have those transcripts. So I don't know if he beat the kid. I don't know if he was charged and beat a murder or if they just never had enough information to charge him. So this was a decade plus later.
Oh, they just didn't have enough evidence.
They just didn't have enough evidence. Yeah. He never was convicted for the murder of Yolanda Brown. Whether that's
been that long and then that's, I don't know about that one. That's crazy.
Now it's fishy.
Now, yeah, it's okay.
I don't know.
Not fishy. I'm saying that like, I don't know, man. That may not have nothing to do with
Yolanda. Possibly. It could have just been his own life stuff. But at the same time, I go, okay, well.
Baby girl's what, 10?
13, about, yeah, something like that. But that's when kids get, you know, asking questions. Do I look like my mom? I don't want to speculate the questions that a kid asks about their dead parent. But, like, I could see how that could get to you if you did it. But it also could be completely unrelated.
He might have been
gone. We'll never know. That's the shitty part. Yolanda's gone. Alexander Green's gone. Basically, we're either this guy committed the perfect murder, or because Yolanda Brown, or more likely, because Yolanda Brown was a black woman, this wasn't a high priority case, and they knew she was murdered, and they just weren't able to connect the dots. Even though Alexander Green was the number one suspect, there wasn't enough evidence there to point the finger at him for a conviction, and so her case remains unsolved to this day.
And she worked where?
She worked at the Las Vegas Hilton.
Hotel
and casino. She was a pit book, like a pit book. She kept the books for the pit at the casino. So it could have been, if I'm going wild speculation, could have been some mob stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. Vegas is a weird town. And you could get caught up. It's very easy. Man, I wish I could call my grandmother, but I don't think she'll tell those stories. But my point is, let me just say this without implicating my grandmother in anything. It's very easy to be in Vegas and work one of those kind of jobs and get your palms greased or, you know, skim a little off the top here, play a little game here, that kind of stuff. I believe my grandmother told me she, at very early on in her career as a pit boss, she was a pit boss.
Allegedly, somebody told me
that somebody that I know who's been on the podcast before did some stuff and she was banned from working in any pits in Las Vegas because she had loose fingers. She was playing some games and doing some little under the table type of stuff. Allegedly.
Yeah.
But, and I'm not saying that Yolanda Brown did that, but like I said, we're either saying Alexander Green committed the perfect crime, the news is, and the police didn't give a shit about this black woman being murdered in Las Vegas, or it was a mob hit. And she was, now the Hilton Casino is not really known for being one of those kind of places because it's a very commercial place. But we're talking about money. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars a night, a weekend, a month. So, you know, I never put that past Las Vegas that somebody crossed somebody or disrespected somebody and something weird happened. So That's all I'm saying. Rest in peace to Yolanda Brown. Prayers to her children, who are now, they're full-grown adults now, but it's just a tragic situation all around. And once again, thank you to Megan and Anthony over at Mayhem in the Desert for putting in the work and doing all the heavy lifting and sending me your case that you guys very thoroughly researched. It's much appreciated. That's my story. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it's Fran's turn to tell you guys some fucked up shit. So stick around.
All right, welcome back. My affirmative murder this week is the Hello Kitty murder case. Have you heard of this case before?
No, I'm very familiar with Hello Kitty, but I don't know.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Murder case. Here we go. So in May of 1999, a very distressed teenage girl paid a visit to Hong Kong police station. The girl had just turned 14 years old. She came alone with no guardian and reported to the police that she got haunted, or somebody has been following her. So this girl told the police about this one particular spirit that would come, and she described the spirit to be a young woman who looked to be in her 20s with blood smeared all over her. At this point, the police then realized why this teenage girl had come to them. This teenage girl confessed to the police that she had taken part in a long month torture and murder of a young woman in her 20s. And the spirit was the victim coming back to haunt her until she confessed. Do you think that like shit like that is people would like really go through shit like, I mean like.
Oh yeah, being haunted by the.
Being haunted by.
That's Macbeth, man. This tells all this time, man.
Do you think, but I mean like.
I think you have to be a pretty heartless person to be able to kill somebody
and, just, like,
and be cool with it. And that is why. And that is why it is the military spends millions of dollars trying to weed those people out. And they fail at it. These people come home with PTSD. It weighs on every person. You have to be a truly sociopathic person to be just feel nothing about murder.
What's that, schizophrenic, right?
Is that? No, it's not schizophrenic.
It's not?
No, that's a different thing. And that gets stigmatized very heavily. No. You have to be a sociopath. You have to not care about people.
I'm talking about like.
No human emotion. Faking human emotion.
I'm talking about hearing voices and believing people's
thoughts. I mean, that's schizophrenia, yeah.
Right. That's what I'm talking about.
But what do you mean? What do you mean?
That's what I'm saying. Her, like, hearing voices and people's haunting her.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I think. I thought you were saying, do you think it's possible that you could hurt somebody and then be haunted by the feelings?
No, I'm saying, well, yeah, that too. But I'm saying, like, is it just a person going through something, or it's like you think it's like a spirit? Like,
no, I mean, I don't believe in that stuff. So what I'm saying is, I believe that you could
do spirits.
I do or I don't.
You don't?
I don't. No, I don't.
Why not?
Because I've never seen one, which is like the laziest answer, right? I've never seen one. But I don't like, huh?
Believe in God. I think yeah, we don't need this conversation before.
We don't need to do this. We've done this before. And
it's a good question.
It's a hard question. It's not a good question. It's a tough. It's a very tough question. It's a very tough question.
And it needs an answer. So do you or do you not?
No. I'm going to answer the question that you asked originally. And I would say that I think that.
You take an easy way out, man.
Yes. No, I will. I will take the easy way out on this. Do I think God exists? I'll take the easy way out. To answer your question that you asked originally, there was some confusion from me. I think that grief and guilt can weigh so heavy on a person that it can physically manifest. Yeah. I really do believe. I think you can see that person in a crowd, hear that things, you know, and the paranoia on top of that, the paranoia of being caught. So guilt, paranoia, the combination of all those things, I think it can physically manifest itself.
Yeah.
So, yes.
I could get over, like, simple shit. Like, I remember just being at work and, like, lightly toss a package that got like fragile on it, and then I go.
Let me go check on this. Damn, shake it.
Yeah, I should have done.
Yeah, I should have done.
I should have done.
Yeah, no, all the time. Or one time, I don't know. I was gonna tell you know. Fuck it, man. I'm trans. One time, I was 7.
Yeah,
my uncle was 9. My grandmother married a guy that had some daughters. My uncle convinced me to pee in a bottle of lemonade. And then give it to like put it around as if they would crack it open and like, oh, yeah. Random bottle of gold lemonade.
Yeah, right.
They never did it, but I felt so bad that I was like, they weren't even looking at it. But I was like, hey, there's pee in there. Like, just so you know, just so you guys know that there's pee in there. And he was so mad. Like, he thought the prank was going to go great. Mm. And we got oh, we got beat so bad. Mm. Oh, it was epic. It was a legendary whooping ever.
Yeah.
I never peed in a bottle since.
Deserve it, man.
On a trips or anything.
It's trauma.
Like, I'm like, you got to pull over to a rest stop. I'm not peeing in a bottle. I'm traumatized like that. Now the whooping was epic.
Hey, man, you can't be doing that. You can't be trying to give people gold.
Oh, I don't know. Listen, we have watched The Little Rascals, and I thought that's just boy hijinks.
Hey,
that's
piss
just
in a bottle, and he's gonna think it's lemonade.
They're gonna drink it. It's gonna be gold. Hilarious.
It's gold.
It's gold
lemonade.
Gold it stinks. It's pee.
Could have apple juice.
Oh yeah. We put some apple juice in this Nest tea bottle.
Foamy at the
yes. This apple juice stinks. Like, oh no, it's artisan. It's artisan apple juice. It's hand squeezed apples. Local. It's locally made apple juice.
Oh man, yeah. So this girl went to the police station, said she was haunted by a person she participated in murdering.
Mm-hmm.
The girl was 13 when she took part in the murder. Young girl.
Mm-hmm.
And she was not alone. She was part of a group that did this to this woman. However, she was the youngest and the only female.
Mm-hmm.
All of the others were men above 20 and were part of a Chinese mafia filled with rich and powerful men. So it was the men who did this to this woman, and she just occasionally joined in. The way she got dragged into this situation was because of an older man was her boyfriend. He was 34 years old.
Mm. Okay.
So the victim was a 23-year-old nightclub hostess, Fan Men Yi. Sources say she was a nightclub hostess, and others say that she was a sex worker. At a very young age, Fan Men Yi was abandoned by her parents, so she grew up in an orphanage. When a child reaches the age of 16, he or she is to leave the orphanage because they believe one is supposed to be able to fend for oneself at that age.
Okay, wow.
16?
Yeah. Just get out with nothing.
Damn.
With nothing.
Nothing.
Just make a life.
Here, you can't even get a job yet, I don't think. Right?
16? 15 and a half.
It's 15. Oh. It was like
I've had two jobs in my life, so I don't even, I'm not the most work experienced person.
I don't know.
No, you have mad jobs. Let's not
I did?
That. Yeah. You were working at the old folks home at like 15?
Yeah, I was, wasn't I?
Yeah.
It was so long ago.
I was like, a job?
Yeah.
Your mom doesn't just give you money?
I mean, yeah, but not like money I was making then.
And yeah, that, sure. No, you had more money. You had way more money than me.
I was crazy.
I was fine having half your money and doing nothing.
Yeah, man. I hated it. I didn't like it at all. Like, I remember, I don't know if I told you, I remember like being there. I told you this before. I remember being there and like when I first started, I was working these. And then the one day I had to work like a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that schedule. I was like, oh shit, I'm here for 8 hours. I called my dad like, I'm here for 8 hours. You see,
this is illegal, right?
This is crazy.
That's a job.
I was 15. 8 hours, bro.
It might be illegal for a 15-year-old to work 8 hours.
I literally almost cried tears, bro. I was like, I'm about to be stuck here for 8 hours.
8 hours. That's almost 24 hours.
Man, I never forget that feeling, bro. Never forget. I was like, this is outrageous.
This is a crime.
Crazy.
Call the police on these people.
15. I won't be stuck away for 8 hours working.
Yeah, until you got that check for $216.
And I was in lunch, splurging, getting all the snacks. Getting all the snacks. Fan Men Yi found herself doing illegal sex work, taking drugs, and committing petty crimes to survive.
At 16.
At 16 years old. I mean, what do you expect?
You gotta get it however you can, I guess.
So Fan Men Yi had a son. And sources say it was from her husband, while others say it was from one of her clients. Mm. In 1997, when Fan Men Yi was 21 years old, she began working in a brothel rather than on the street. She was still a sex worker, but now it was more regulated and safer. Due to Fan Men Yi's job, she came in contact with many dangerous characters, and most of her clients were members of the Chinese Mafia group. Mm. She knew how dangerous it was, but she still took the risk. One day, Cheng Man Luk, one of her usual clients, who was also a member of the mafia, came and he always asked for Fan Men Yi because she was his favorite. Meanwhile, Fan Men Yi had already decided to try her luck and steal from this man after they finished. And Chang Man Luk's wallet had about 4,000 Hong Kong dollars, which were equivalent to about 400 British pounds.
That's a nice little chunk of change.
Yeah, of course, he found out. And when he did, he demanded that she pay everything back, with an interest of $10,000.
Mm. So like another eight on top of the four.
Hell of an interest. Mm. He also must have threatened her because she immediately paid back the $4,000 and then he asked for the remaining $10,000. Mm. And so Fan Man Yi said that she was going to pay the $10,000, but it would take her a bit longer to gather the money. Mm. So Chang Man Luck was not happy. Again, this dude was
in the mob. What race do you think has the scariest gangs?
Race.
Because the Chinese, like the triad and stuff with the when they're butt naked and they got the body tattoos all up on their ass and back and everything.
Does the
Yakuza
cartel count?
Oh yeah, the cartel definitely counts. Cartel's pretty fucking scary. Yeah. Because they all just look like regular, and they all just look like regular people. They're all just wearing like Wrangler jeans and tank tops, and they'll just put you in a drum.
Yeah, they would just embarrass you.
Yeah, cut your dick off, put it in your mouth.
It's crazy. Yeah, your head tapped off with your mouth open. It's like, whoa.
That's fair.
Absolutely, by far.
Yeah. Cartel.
Maybe because I know more about the cartel than any of the other ones, but. Mm. Did you see the video? Started to get off track. There was a video I saw where like these guys went on like the wrong path.
Oh, and they thought they were going to get murdered?
Yes.
Yeah, I saw that. They
terrified.
It was over.
The dude was like, go. He was like,
it was two gay dudes.
Oh, my. Oh, my goodness, man. Just
they were
fear.
Begging for their life. They were like, oh, you guys aren't who we thought. Yeah, okay, go ahead. Yeah. But go now.
Crazy. And the guy was just like, hey, just calm.
Yeah.
Calm down.
I could tell that if they were two guys that they wanted to kill, those were the guys. Those are the guys that you don't want to pull your car over. Like, they were the guys.
Who? Oh,
the guys outside of the car.
Yeah.
They were the guys.
Absolutely. Yeah,
but they just were like, we're not going to kill these two gay American dudes. Yeah. Like, this will be an incident.
Yeah.
But if you guys were enemies of ours, oh, yeah, we would have put your head on top of the car and all that.
Oh, my goodness.
They were the guy. It wasn't like the guys in the car were being racist.
No.
They were right.
They
were the guys.
They knew they went down the wrong road or whatever they was going.
That was crazy. No. Yeah. No, you're right. Cartel.
Terrified.
As of the last decade,
they knew immediately. I mean, because they pop out with AK-47s.
And
you were like, what is going on here?
It's a rapper-ooski. Yeah, as of the last decade, I'd say, cartel, terrifying.
They was terrified, man. They was like, this is it.
Number one terrifying gang, association, crew, whatever, cartel.
Yeah. And so Fan Man Yi said that she was going to pay back the $10,000, but it would take her a little longer. So Chang Man Luck was not happy, and he believed if he gave her more time, she might try to escape. So with the help of two of his friends, 27-year-old Leong Xing Cho and 21-year-old Ling Wai Lun, they searched for Fan Man Yi. And it was in March 1999 that the men found Fan Man Yi on the road. She had gone back to street business because she was too scared to go back to the brothel.
Mm. Yeah. And she has to make money. It's like, I owe you money. I have to do what I know to pay you back. And I can't do it at my safe place.
Right. She has to make money. And so these men grabbed Fan Man Yi and drove her to the property belonging to the mafia group. Mm. They put her in an old, rundown, unfurnished, dark apartment. Chang Man Luck planned that he would make Fan Man Yi pay off her debt by giving service to people.
Oh.
He said a brothel was just Fan Man Yi so she could earn money to pay her debt.
Oh.
Now you're doing this. This is just entertainment at this point. That's had nothing to do with her paying you back.
Yeah. You know, bring all your friends over and all.
Right.
Yeah, that's fucked.
So the first night that she stayed in the apartment, the three men just decided to beat and rape Fan Man Yi. All the information was being told by the teenage girl. Again, you remember this girl? She told the whole story.
She's telling the story?
Yeah.
Got it.
So the beatings and rape became a routine, and every day Fan Man Yi would be beaten and raped by these three men. Eventually, they became more creative and began to use weapons on Fan Man Yi. Mm. This story reminds me of another story that I did a while ago. What was her name again?
Junko Furuta.
And that story was...
That was awful. But that was like a bunch of school kids. Their parents were home and shit.
Parents were home and then basically did no time.
Yeah.
When he did that to that girl. And it was torture that... It was called 44 Days of Hell.
Yeah.
And this story reminds me of that.
But the other fucked up part is now she's in this situation. They're not counting money. They're not like doing a tally of every time they sexually assault this woman.
That's what I'm saying.
Debt being paid back for what you're doing.
Exactly. So eventually they became more creative and began to use weapons on Fan Man Yi. And they would use metal bars and kitchen utensils, pieces of furniture to beat her up. The teenage girl also said that they would force Fan Man Yi to smile and tell them how she got excited from her beatings and that Fan Man Yi would not do that. They would beat her even harder.
Jesus Christ, man.
After a while, Fan Man Yi was so brutally beaten up that she could no longer provide these services she was using to pay off her debt. Her clients would refuse to pay to have sex with her because she was so disfigured. So Chang Man Luk's plan was now falling apart. But he did not care because now he was using her as his punching bag. And when they were not doing anything to Fan Man Yi, they would all hang out in a separate room playing video games as if they were not a dying woman in the next room. So they was just, like, we was just talking about guilt and shit like that. They was
They didn't have any of that.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, yeah. That speaks a lot to how undervalued women are around the world, but especially in China. First of all, having a daughter is frowned upon in China.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Like, to the point that, like, a lot of times they'll abort daughters over sons. Like, they prefer sons. And, you know, that's the same thing here. We see the videos. And so, well, it's just like a man is a businessman and goes and provides and whatever. And we have the same kind of gross stigmas here. We see the videos on going viral all the time of, like, a dude getting mad because the dust was pink out of the balloon, which you're a cornball if that's what you do. But in China, it's a lot more severe. Like, they will kill, they will abort girl babies because they don't want them. Because you're only allowed to have one child. I think it's like a one-child household. And if you can only have one, because they're overpopulated. And if you can only have one child, you want it to be a boy. So a lot of girls get aborted in China.
Damn.
So, but that just gets like, yeah, of course. Yeah, she's just some girl, some woman. We don't give a shit. Let's go in this other room and play games.
That's fucked up, man.
Very fucked up.
So as more days flew by, the men became more and more creative with the ways they would beat Fan Man Yi. They began to melt and burn plastic on her body, drip candle wax on her, and when they ran out of things to burn, they just burned her directly. They burned her feet so she could not stand, walk, or do anything at all. They would wound her, and the men would take food and spices, dirt, and urine, and they would stuff it into her wounds. The men also forced her to consume her urine and feces, and they would even starve her. At a point, Fan Man Yi could not even move, and the boys said that she was not fun anymore because she did not react much to the beatings. I mean,
she's on the verge of death, you know? That's awful, man. Everything about that was terrible.
One of the men decided to tie Fan Man Yi and leave her suspended in the air so she would be easier to beat. So they tied her wrist up with electrical cords and tied up the other end to the ceiling fan, and they would leave her there for hours, sometimes overnight. Then on the 15th of April, the three men and his girlfriend, the 13-year-old girl that decided to go out.
Yeah.
Usually they would lock Fan Man Yi in the bathroom to make it harder for her to escape. They stayed out for hours, and when they came back, that was when Chang Man Luk's 13-year-old girlfriend went to use the bathroom and found Fan Man Yi dead in the bathtub. Her body was oozing, and they did not want to keep a dead body in the apartment. They also did not want her body to be recognized when found. So they cut her body into pieces, and to remove the flesh from the bones, they put them into a pot and boiled it until it was easier to remove. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Sources say that they even used the same pot to cook food.
Damn. Brutal. That's fucking brutal, man.
Yeah, man. This case was called the Hello Kitty case because when the men finished boiling off muscles from her skull, they stuffed her skull into a head of a Hello Kitty mermaid doll and sewed it back up. The only thing the police found was her skull in the doll, her teeth on the floor, and the rest of her organs in the fridge. The three men had also tied their part of the story, saying that they were just running a brothel with Fan Man Yi, and it was all consensual. But Fan Man Yi was addicted to drugs, and on that particular day, she accidentally overdosed. And they said that they knew if one of their sex workers died, that they would be in trouble. So they decided to hide her body through that means. So
it's better to get a dismemberment charge than a murder charge.
Yeah, essentially. But they also tried to say that she overdosed.
Yeah, well, she died on her own.
She died. She took those drugs and she died on her own.
Yeah.
After much thought, all three men got charged with manslaughter. They were all given life sentences and were all visited by a psychiatrist, but they were diagnosed with no mental illness. They were just sociopaths who had no emotion. Although the teenage girl was part of this crime, she was let free because she had brought so much evidence for the investigation.
Yeah.
So it sounded like she just, I wouldn't say.
She was there.
She was.
And she was just doing what an adult, I mean, she was 13.
Yeah. Also, she found the girl in the bathroom.
But like, I wouldn't be surprised if they like made her throw shit at her or something like that, you know?
Yeah, true, true.
But she's 13 and being sexually assaulted by a full grown man.
Yeah.
So she's not culpable in any of the stuff that he's making her do.
Yep. Due to the accounts that this teenage girl gave about Fan Man Yee's coming to haunt her, people believed that her spirit was easy to communicate. So the apartment building where Fan Man Yee got killed became a meeting place for people who believed they could contact her spirit.
Mm.
At first, it was innocent, but it became toxic when people began to do questionable things there. Sick, gross people doing weird shit. So in 2012, it was demolished. And in 2016, on the same plot of land where the building once was, a new hotel, is built now on that same land.
Irrelevant hotel, right? Like, it's not like a ghost themed hotel.
I don't think so. I think it's just a regular hotel. So that was the Hello Kitty murder case.
That was, put a trigger warning or something.
Yeah, definitely. That's not as gruesome as the Junko Furuta case, which I'm bringing up because it's pretty fucking. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, like, it is a lot of similarities in it as far as the abuse, the wax. There was wax and cuts
severity
and
severity of it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, it's just
the graphic nature of it. It's all terrible. The Grudge is based off of that sentiment that, oh, the 13-year-old girl saw a ghost from something that she was involved in or whatever. Like, that's the whole premise of those movies, those Grudge movies. You remember those movies? It's like something so tragic happened here that the energy, it won't leave. And it's like angry. It's a bunch of anger and hate and all this stuff. And it's manifested into like a ghost of some kind. So I don't know. That's what I said. When you say spirits and when you get into spirituality, it's easier for me to go like, I don't really believe in that kind of stuff. But I won't go to a place where I know horrible things happen. Like, I don't really have a desire to go to Auschwitz and, like, walk around and feel the weight of all of that death. And you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's tangible in the, like, it can, like, I feel like it can stick to you.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. Spirit, I don't know, that's a weird word, but I don't want to go anywhere where there was a lot of pain and anguish and fear. I feel like that stuff stays in the walls.
You're just walking through it. That's how I feel when I ride past
cemeteries.
No.
Oh.
What's that place in Pennsylvania?
Gettysburg.
Yeah. That's how I feel when I go past there.
That's a light. I mean, that was a war.
Yeah.
You know, not a particularly like torturous place. I mean, that was like a battlefield.
Yeah.
So let alone you go to like an old mental health facility.
Which
or
I do want to go in.
Oh, I don't at all.
You and me both.
Or like an old prison. Yeah. You know, like an old abandoned prison or something like that. No, I just told you why I would never want to do those things, man.
Let's go check it out.
God bless, man. You go do your thing.
We can do it together. And pee on the road.
I can't pee in a bottle. If you find something other than a bottle.
What are you talking about?
I thought you said pee on the road.
I said A and P on the road.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no.
Fucking
God. Oh, yeah, my bad. Yeah, hey, man. Let's go ahead and get in the traumatized. Let's go ahead and get to the good vibes.
Welcome back. It's my time to go first on this good vibe segment. But I'm switching it up, man. I'm not doing a good vibe this week.
Whoa.
I'm not doing a good vibe.
Plot twist.
I'll let you do that. I'll let you handle the good vibe this week.
Okay.
What I'm going to do is.
Okay.
I found this short story that I wanted to read. It's very short.
Okay.
And I kind of wanted to hear what you think. I think it's going to be a good story.
Okay.
I came across it looking for my story from Affirmative Murder. And I was like, oh, this is too short for me to do as a story. So I was like, I was really doing good vibes.
Sure.
Here we go. And just let me know if you heard of it before I get to the end. If
okay.
In the middle, you're like, oh, I heard this before. Just let me know.
Okay.
So on March 23rd, 1994, a medical examiner viewed the body of Ronald Opis and concluded that he died from a gunshot wound to the head caused by a shotgun.
Oh, wow, Jesus.
Investigation to that point had revealed that the descendant had jumped from the top of a 10-story building with the intent to commit suicide. You with me?
The same guy?
Yeah.
So he was shot and he jumped from a roof?
They're saying that he died from a gunshot, but the investigation said that no, he jumped from a 10-story building.
So the initial thought was he was shot, then investigation determined he jumped from a roof.
Building. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. He left a note indicating the reason why, you know, he jumped from the building.
Uh-huh.
As he passed the 9th floor on the way down, his life was interrupted by a shotgun blast through a window, killing him instantly. You with me?
I think so. Sounds like a DC movie or something. Batman.
Neither the shooter nor the descendant was aware that a safety net had been erected at the 8th floor, at the 8th floor level, to protect some window washers.
Mm.
And that the descendant will most likely not even been able to complete his intent to commit suicide because of this.
Mm.
Right?
Okay.
Ordinarily, a person who sets out to commit suicide and ultimately succeeds, even if the mechanism might not be what they intended, it is defined as having committed suicide.
Okay.
That he was shot on the way to certain death 9 stories below probably would not change his mode of death from the suicide to homicide.
Yeah, like he wouldn't have survived.
Exactly.
If he wasn't shot.
But the fact that his suicide intent not even being achieved under any circumstances caused a medical examiner to feel that he had homicide on his hands. That he had a homicide on his hands.
Interesting.
Further investigation led to the discovery that the room on the 9th floor, hence the shotgun blast, emanated was occupied by an elderly man and his wife. He was threatening her with a shotgun because of an interspousal spat and became so upset that he could not hold the shotgun straight.
Uh-huh.
Therefore, when he pulled the trigger, he completely missed his wife and the pellets went through the window, striking the descendant.
Wow.
When one intends to kill subject A but kills B, subject B, in an attempt, one is guilty of murder of subject B. The old man was confronted with this conclusion, but both he and his wife were adamant in stating that neither knew that the shotgun was loaded.
Come on, lady. Come on.
It was a long time habit of the old man.
Well, like, what are you gonna say after your husband shoots a gun at you? Whatever the hell he told you to say. You know what I mean? Like,
true.
I mean,
true.
Come on. Like, God.
So it was a long time habit that the old man threatened his wife with an unloaded shotgun.
Oh, he does it a lot.
Yeah. But he had no intent to murder her. Therefore, the killing of the descendant appeared then to be an accident. That is, the gun had been accidentally loaded. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But further investigation turned up a witness that their son was seen loading the shotgun approximately 6 weeks prior to the fatal incident.
Mm-hmm.
That investigation showed that the mother, which is the old lady,
mm-hmm,
had cut off her son's financial support. And her son knowingly, don't say nothing, just ride with me, knowingly the propensity of his father to use the shotgun threateningly, loaded the gun with the expectation that the father would shoot his mother. The case now becomes one of murder on the part of his son for the death of Ronald Opis. Right? Don't say anything. Just ride with me. Ronald Opis. Now comes the exquisite twist. Further investigation revealed that the son, Ronald Opis himself, had become increasingly despondent over the failure of his attempt to get his mother murdered. This led to him jumping off the 10-story building on March 23rd only to be killed by a shotgun blast through a 9-story window.
Is this real?
But this is
this, no, I was like, no way. That's where you lost me. Okay, because I was with you. I was like, this is interesting. No, okay, no, you lost me. Okay, that's where I was like, no, this is bullshit. This is like a story. Okay, because that was this is like a that's like almost like a riddle. It's like a riddle.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. No, that was a really good story though. Okay, you had me. I was like, damn, this is interesting. In the court of law, like, who's responsible and all this type of stuff. And it was him who jumped off the building in the first place.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was bullshit. But you had me. Oh, that was good. That's a good story. No, that's a good story. I wanted to jump in so many times. You're like, oh, yeah, so he put, because that's some hitman shit to be
like, man.
Oh, he always threatens the mom with the gun.
Yeah, man.
This time the gun will be loaded.
Crazy.
Alec Baldwin shit. I never heard that story before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how they came across. I read that. I was like,
yeah.
No fucking way, man.
I guess it's good vibes that we're laughing about it. Yeah. You know, so yeah.
It's fake.
Yeah,
so,
it's fake story.
Yeah.
Fake story. My good vibe story is a lot more nonsensical than that elaborate thing you just told. It's about a farmer whose donkey now acts like a dog after spending months living at home with his family pups.
All right.
Here's an adorable picture of them laying on the couch too, right? It's like Shrek.
That's a donkey.
That's a donkey. Mm. It's a whole ass.
Yeah. Eddie Murphy?
Huh?
No, I'm kidding.
It's not. Well, yeah, it could be. I don't know. Haven't seen him in a while. So a donkey ditched by his mom now thinks that it's a dog after it was raised amongst pooches. Wow. John Natal and his partner, Grazina Pervinus, live on England's East Coast, and when they saw the mother of a miniature mule rejecting her own foal, I guess what they call baby jackasses, they decided to hand rear him in their homes. 3-month-old Kai had a tough start to life without his mother, and after his mother turned on him, but Gazina, a dog trainer, suggested a hands-on approach. The pair fitted their foal with a doggy diaper and shared caring duties over the next critical 6 weeks. She said, I went to the pet shop and bought the big dog nappies because you don't want donkey baby poo all over your house. No, you don't, John, who's 64 years old. What a task to take on a 64 years old. I plan on being retiring and doing nothing. Nothing like this anyway, raising a donkey. In the first days, 40-year-old, okay, he's got him a little young thing. He's 64, okay. I'm not minding their business. 40-year-old Grazina fed Kai with milk from his estranged mother's through a tube to ensure the youngster got the right nutrients. So I guess the mom was still around the property. She kept him on that for 2 or 3 weeks. She was feeding him every hour at a time. She was like a zombie. And yeah, he's got a big diaper on. Wow, this is white people shit, man. This is interesting. White people do some interesting shit. Soon, Kai became
a people diaper.
No, that's a dog diaper apparently, but it's for a big ass dog like a Beethoven or something. those good movies. Man, remember those movies?
Yeah, I remember that movie.
Beethoven, man, it's a good movie. Well, Beethoven the Fifth, I think they got up to. They made a bunch of those movies. Yeah, dog probably died. Anyway, soon Kai began playing with their dogs and began exhibiting hound like behavior. Kai now comes running with the dogs whenever John whistles. Big ass fucking mule running into the room. He even started playing with a ball and everything. And now I can go for a walk down the road and he'll follow me like a dog. This shit is crazy. Okay. Big ass donkey. or he would come back in the house every evening because he also needed human contact. It was like, he's a dog now. If I get in my van to go out, he'll go out and chase after the van. He's certainly a character. Here's a picture of a big ass fucking German Shepherd or something hugging on this damn mule. It looks fake. It looks fake, but it's real. Man, it's interesting, bro. They got a whole barn animal on the couch wearing a diaper.
Yeah, I'm not with none of that.
It's crazy, the world. So little Kai moved back into the paddock with the other donkeys 3 weeks ago. It's probably miserable. He's like, man, this is what y'all don't watch TV in here? This is boring.
Right.
He's grown up, she said. He's got all his teeth and he's eating well. He's gonna live, and that's the main thing. My main concern was to keep him alive. Well, you've spoiled him, lady, and I think that that's great, but there's no way he's enjoying being a donkey now. Now he's experienced the life of being a dog?
I'll be out in a barn now?
Yeah, fucking eating hay.
It's not
fun. He used to eat kibbles and bits. Anyway, Fran, yes. Before my little PSA I wanted to give to people. out there before we go. So this episode's coming out on Martin Luther King Day. I want to say to people, before you, especially to our audience, because our audience is very much white people with I think, good intentions, right? Before you post that picture of Martin Luther King with your caption of a Martin Luther King quote and all that stuff, I want you to ask yourself, what are you doing in the real world? Are you advocating for voters' rights legislation locally? Are you making a difference in your community? Are you doing the things that Martin Luther King preached about? Or are you just posting a picture? Because performative activism is just so passe. I'm just sick of it. I'm just over it. I'm over the black square mentality and post this picture on this day and we are in solidarity and whatever. What are you doing? And in all honesty, I'm not the person to speak monolithically for black people. But if you're not doing anything, I don't care. But then just don't post the picture. Because what does it mean? What do empty gestures mean in 2022? They don't mean anything, right? So I'm not going to stop you all from posting your pictures of Martin Luther King. Please go forth, post them, get your likes, get your gratification, feel good about yourself. Please do. But really ask yourself before you press send on that picture, what are you actually doing? What are you doing that Martin Luther King would be proud about? Because people have it really makes me sick, man. Like people have weaponized Martin Luther King. People that would have hated Martin Luther King, they made him into this Jesus-like figure that's like, hey, guys, stop being so worried about racism. Martin Luther King wouldn't want you guys out here marching on the streets. It's like, that's exactly what he did. What are you talking? What the fuck are you talking about? Yeah. Like, why? What do you mean? And he's become this figure of like, hey, guys, let's just all put our differences aside. Am I racist? Yes. But Martin Luther King would want us to get along. So just I'm allowed to be racist if I can stand to be around you people for 10 minutes. And that's what Martin Luther King's dream was really all about. You know, so I just want people to really think like, what are you doing? And again, if you're not doing anything, I don't give a shit, but don't post the picture. Like, it's performative. It's bullshit. It's not real. Go out and really try to make a difference in the world. I'm not saying that earns you the privilege to post the picture. Post the picture, whatever. But like, put some action behind your picture too. Put some action behind your post. That's all I ask for. One last thing also. Another thing, it's just because it's just so boring and I'm tired of it and I hate to be on a soapbox, but black people are not a sounding board for your anger towards white people as white people. We have a lot of our own shit going on. I don't need you coming up to me and being like, fucking white people, am I right? Like, listen, take that up. That's a you thing. I'm not walking around doing that with my life. So I don't need you to come up to me like that's the thing we're going to have. That's not an olive branch to black people. Just to let people know, we don't care if you hate white people. If you're mad at whitey and you're white.
Yeah.
That's your own shit. That's not hey, man, solidarity, right? I hate them too. Like, no, bro, I got my own shit going on. I'm not concerned about that. We're not homies now because you said I hate white people. So these are all just things just to think about. I don't need you to demonize white people to be cool with me. The same way there was a whole fucking bunch of black dude podcasters caught hell over the last week. You're not on the internet, so you don't know. We're not in the space, obviously, but it's like it was any black dude podcasters were like they were on the chopping block to see where you stand. But there was these two cornballs out of Miami. They're like dudes that like they're those dudes that like they date white women, but they're like, and we would never.
I saw that.
It was crazy. Disrespected this black woman, had her on the platform or whatever. Said the most crazy, flagrant shit to her ever. And it makes me sick that there are people that think that whatever, dating outside of your race in whatever way, but it happens specifically with black men that they think they need to like denigrate black women to get acceptance to like, see, will you date me now? White woman, Asian woman, Hispanic woman, whatever. Fuck that black lady. She's ghetto. Like I have to like trash her to the ground. You don't got to bring them into your shit to like say why you date this race of people.
I feel that way when.
And that's how I feel when white people go like, fucking white people. I'm like, all right, man, you don't need to like fucking self-deprecate to hang out.
I feel that way when like other races are racist towards black people trying to fit in with white people. That's how I feel.
Oh, no, that's deep.
That's why.
Cuban people and Hispanic people.
Yeah, because I see a couple of videos where it's like, there was one, I'm sure you probably saw it, but there was one with a guy, I guess he does like videos or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's at the basketball game. He was like dressed up as like DeMarcus Cousins.
Oh.
Have you seen that?
I might have.
And there was like this, I don't know if he was Filipino or something. Yeah, I was talking about, and he went like, your dad's in jail or something. Yeah, like I remember. And When I see stuff like that, I go, I feel like you're trying to fit in. You're trying to fit in with the group you're hanging out with.
I get that. Yeah, it's crazy. It's really crazy. There are people out here who will self-deprecate or like push off the like, yeah, I know I'm like, I have brown skin, but like, look at that fucking racist term to him, right? Yeah. Let's all laugh at that guy. So, you guys accept me, right? You guys like me, right?
Shout out to that dude for just like joking it off.
Yeah.
I would have slapped the shit out of that dude. I don't care where I was at.
Yeah. Okay.
Your dad's in jail. What?
Yeah.
You don't even know me. Just say something crazy like that.
No, you gotta scrap it out. Yeah, I get that.
So
in summation, folks, Martin Luther King, he had a dream. He wanted people to go out and be unified and do incredible things to change the world together, not by tearing down one group of people together to make yourself feel included. This isn't the dream to like have to hide who you are. I don't think Martin Luther King's dream was assimilation. It wasn't like, oh, you have to denounce who you are and act like us and then make fun of other people who aren't us in order for us to accept you. It's like, no, you get to be you. It's a melting pot.
Yeah.
It's what America's supposed to be. Everybody gets to be who they are and everybody's accepting of that. And I like to think that that day will come someday. We're definitely not there yet. When just last year, you know, they're cutting kids' dreadlocks off to do sporting events and shit like that. You know, people aren't allowed to be their most authentic selves in society. And so we're not there yet. But, you know, what's not going to get us there? Posting a picture of Martin Luther King holding up his jail sign. It's just not going to do fuck all. It's going to get you some likes. It's going to feel good. People are going to comment, fists up. Those people's fists will probably be white emojis. And the world will stay the same. So
you're supposed to do them in color. You're supposed to start white and then go black.
That's true. It'll probably be that. Yeah, the gradient from white to beige to black fists. You'll get a lot of that. And it'll feel good. And your algorithm will praise you. But we'll be right where we were at the end of Monday. So what I say is, like, put some action behind that post and go out and make a real difference in the world. That's
something. He got y'all a day off. Yeah. Go do something.
Exactly, man. You got a day off. Go do something for Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
Go out there and make a positive change in the world. That's what you need to do. Don't post until you do that. Make a donation to a cause. Do something. And tell your mom I said it. This has been another episode of Affirmative Murder. I've been Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner in true crime, Francel Evans. And we'll see you guys next week.
Peace.